Hello, and welcome to the Service Contractors Business CD of the Month. This monthly CD web series represents yet another step in accomplishing Grandy & Associates' vision of teaching contractors how to run profitable businesses. Each month, a different national speaker from throughout the service and trades industry shares dozens of cost-reducing, profit-increasing ideas to help you become a more profitable company. Customer service is always on our minds, or at least it should be. The question is not, do we think about it? The question is, do we do anything about it? This month's speaker is no stranger to our listeners. Philip Van Houser has done several presentations for this series over the years. If you are an online listener, I would strongly suggest that you look Philip up in the archive section of the website and then listen to his past presentations. Customer service is again our topic this month. You'll quickly realize that Philip is a professional speaker. He is entertaining and makes his point very clear using stories and humor. This month, Philip is going to provide 6 ways of wooing, wowing, and winning customers and their loyalty through the illustration of Willie, a most unusual taxi driver. You're not only going to enjoy this presentation, you'll learn a lot about the importance of outstanding community service.
What does service look like? Have you ever thought about it? You promote it. You say we're here to service our customers. John talks about the focus is on service. I'm saying that my presentation is all about service. But what does service look like? Show of hands now if you don't mind. How many of you can honestly say that you can see bad service from a mile away? Let me see a show of hands. It's pretty easy, isn't it? It's marked by any number of things. It's marked by inattention. It's marked by ambivalence. It's marked by a lack of professionalism, and on and on and on. You can see it from a distance. You know, sometimes for me as a speaker, I see concepts in stories. I see concepts in situations. Let me tell you a quick story that I experienced several years ago. It's been almost 11, maybe 12 years ago now. But it's an issue that all of you in financial services and banking need to be aware of, because you can see bad service from a distance. I travel a lot. This is what I do 100% of my time. I'm a full-time professional speaker, as you heard Andy say in the introduction. Well, because of that, I travel about 65% of my time. I work with my wife. She works in the business. She runs the business while I'm gone. And oftentimes when I am home, I don't know what to do with myself because I travel so much. And, you know, I get in her hair is what happens, really. So about 10 or 11 years ago, I was home for a couple of days without having to go out and do a presentation, and I was trying to be that good, dutiful husband. And so I said to Susan, I said, Susan, I'm available. You usually run all the errands. Just tell me, what do you want me to do? I'm here to run your errands for you today. She said, Phil, you don't have to. I know how to do it. I said, no, I want to, and I really insisted. She said, well, you can go to the bank for me. Well, I mean, I've been going to the bank ever since I was a little boy, just like all of you have. But frankly, I didn't go to the bank regularly, and I said, okay, where do you go? I knew which bank. It was one of these big national banks. We were still living in Florida at the time. I said, now, which of the branches do you go to? She said, I go down to the branch, Alpha Silver Springs Boulevard, Ocala, Florida. I go there, just drive through. I've already got it made up. It won't be a problem. Just everything will be fine. I said, okay, fine, fine. So I drive down, and sure enough, I find the branch. I knew where it was, you know, and I drove in, and they had 4 lanes, 2 of which were occupied, the 2 close to the building. So I went to the 3rd lane, and I drove through there, and I, you know, I've done this 1,000 times before. I drove into this lane, and I stopped, and I looked over. Nobody said anything. I looked over, and sure enough, there's this, you know, this cylinder. You all know what the cylinders are. It said, send. I pushed the button, send. All of a sudden, and this little thing comes, you know. And I put the deposit slip, and I hit the button, send, sucks it up, and it's gone. And I sit there, and I probably, oh, not more than a minute, maybe a minute and a half at the very most. All of a sudden, I hear, and it's back. And I open it up, and there's the receipt and the whole thing. Not one word has been spoken during this entire encounter. I sat there, and I thought, well, they must be busy. Don't they see me out here? Am I invisible? No words. I get in the car and I drive back. I come back to the house. I ran a couple of other errands for Susan. As I come back in the house, she said, "So how did it go?" And I said, "Well, it went fine, but something strange happened at the bank." She said, "What was that?" I said, "Well, when I went through the drive-through teller, I made my deposit. I hit the buttons that sucked it up, sent it back to me. All that. Nobody spoke to me." Then she said, "Phil, they never speak." I said, "Do what?" She said, "They never speak. Phil, I go through there several times a week. They never speak when I go through." I said, "Well, no, that's not right." She said, "Phil, right or wrong, they never speak." I said, "Well, they're going to speak to me. I got up on my high horse, you know." She just said, "Okay, whatever." Well, she forgot about it, but I didn't forget about it. The next day, I was still at home. I saw her getting ready to make another deposit, and I said to her, "Let me take this." She said, "Phil, let me just tell you something. You're going to go down there and you're going to get mad." I said, "No, I'm not going to get mad. I'm going to go down there, and they're going to speak to me." She said, "Phil, okay, just go ahead." I went down there, intentionally went to the same branch, went back to the third row again, hit the button, sucked it down, boom, boom. Nobody spoke to me again. 2 days in a row. When I came home this time, I was fit to be tied. I said, "Now, this is not right. This is what's wrong with America today. Service is wrong." And I just went off. Susan said, "Phil, it happens to everyone. Why should you be special?" Isn't that an interesting concept of service? Why should I be special? Well, the reason I should be special is because I am the customer. That's exactly right. Now, should I just be special? Should it only be me that gets special treatment? No. Who should get the special treatment? Every customer. Well, she said, "That may well be. But Phil, get in reality, buddy. You're not the most important person in their life. You're just one little peon account. They have accounts all over this country. They're a huge bank. They don't need you." And I said, "Well, I'll tell you one thing. Tomorrow, I'm going to take it through one more time. And if they don't..." And then I sort of tailed off. She said, "If they don't..." I said, "If they don't, I'm going to close my account." She said, "No, you're not." I said, "Yes, I am." She said, "Okay, whatever." Next day, I had to go to Gainesville, Florida to fly out to another presentation. I snatched that deposit out of her hand and said, "Okay, I'm going through this bank before I go to the airport. All right?" She said, "Phil, I'm going to tell you something. You're going to get all cranked up again." I said, "Well, I'll call you back." I went through. What happened? Exactly the same thing. Went through the same line. No one spoke. 3 days in a row. This is not an exaggeration. I swear that this is happening exactly like I'm telling you. 3 days in a row, not one word, not one syllable was uttered. Not thank you, not good day, not come see us again, not kiss my foot, not nothing. 3 solid days. On the way to the airport, I called my wife. I said, "All right, I want you to go down there. It's about an hour drive for me to get to the airport. I want you to go down there." She said, "What do you want me to do?" I said, "I want you to close that account." She said, "Why me?" I said, "Because I'm a busy man. That's why." She said, "Are you serious?" I said, "I am serious. I want you to go down there and I want you to close the account. I'm going to call you when I get to Gainesville. I want that money in your hand when I get to Gainesville." Well, I got to Gainesville Airport. I ran in there, checked my bags. I called Susan. I said, "Susan, did you close the account?" She said, "Yes." I said, "Did you get the money?" She said, cashier's check laying on your desk right now." Then I asked her a very important question. I said, "What did they say?" And she said, "Nothing." Now, I realize they were going to close the bank when I closed my account. I understand that. But doesn't it make sense that if someone who's had their account there for a long time just all of a sudden comes in one day and closes their account, it's worthy at least of one question? What's the question? Why? Well, she said, "Be that as it may, Phil, we're sitting here with a cashier's check. Now we don't have a bank anywhere. What are we supposed to do now?" I said, "I don't know. I hadn't thought about that. I couldn't believe they'd actually let you close the account. I'll tell you, I'll be home tomorrow." And so I flew back. And the whole time I was gone, I'm thinking, what am I going to do now? Well, obviously, I've got to find a new bank. Pride won't let me go back to that other bank. Even if I wanted to, pride wouldn't let me do it. There are other choices. We do understand that. So I went to another bank. Now, it's very important that you understand how I selected this next bank. I did not go on the web 10 years ago. I wouldn't have done that anyway. But I did not go online to check all the available banks and what their deposits and what their rankings and ratings and all that. Even if I'd have known how to do that, I would not have done it. Do you know how I picked my bank to deposit my meager savings, my business account, everything that we had? Do you know how I picked that? I thought of who I knew that worked at the bank that I liked. Do you understand that? I thought of all the people that I knew that worked at banks in Ocala, Florida that I liked. And immediately, Mark Ostrand came to mind. Now, Mark Ostrand, I didn't know him real well, except that I knew that we'd served on the United Way board together on a different occasion. We had had conversations, seemed like a nice guy. And so I got in my car and I drove all the way across town, literally two times as far as the bank that we had done business with. I went clear across town to his branch. I marched myself in, cashier check in my pocket, walked up there. Young lady, as soon as I walked in, "Hello, sir, how are you? Can I help you?" I said, "Well, I want to open an account." "Oh, great, wonderful, come down." I said, "No, nothing personal, but I wanted to do it with Mark Ostrand." "Well, Mark's tied up right now with a customer. It may be 10, 15 minutes. I said, "That's fine, I'll be happy to wait." She said, "Well, can I get you coffee or soda or something?" I said, no, "I'll be right here." She said, "Fine." So I sat down. Sure enough, about 10 or 15 minutes later, here comes Mark. "Phil, how you doing?" Shook my hand, you know. I shook his hand. He said, "Come on back." I went back to his office, sat down. He said, "So what can I do for you?" I said, "Well, I want to open a business account, both checking and savings. I want to open a personal account, checking and savings. I don't know what else I need right now, but that's what I want to start with." He said, "Oh, great. What a good news." I said, wait. "Before we do it, I want to tell you why I want to do it." See, I'm about to bust to the same because nobody's asked me yet. He said, "I'm sorry, Phil, why do you want to open an account with us?" I said, "Because they didn't speak to me at the other bank." He said, "Okay, no, Mark, they did not speak to me three times. Mark, do you understand what I'm telling you? For the next 5 years, when I walk in that bank, I swear to you, every person in that bank, hi, Phil, hi, Mr. Van Hoosen, hi, Mr. Van Hoosen, hi, how you doing?" Now, did I care? Did I care if they were doing it to everybody else or not as a customer? Yes or no? No. Did I care that they were doing it to me? Yes. Yes. Now, one more part of the story. About a year and a half after that occasion, I got a telephone call from the local bankers association asking me to speak at their monthly meeting. Soon as I hung up the telephone, my wife said, "Are you going to tell the story?" I said, "I don't know." And I battled with that for a couple of days. Then I thought, no, I'm not going to go down there and embarrass someone intentionally. That's not my calling. My calling is to help, to encourage, to uplift, etc. However, when I got to that occasion, like tonight, there was a sort of a social hour before, and people were milling around and the whole thing, and I'm trying to meet and greet and the whole thing. I'm standing there and a woman walks up to me and she takes my hand. She says, "I understand you're the speaker." And I said, "Yes, Philip Banner." She said, "Well, I'm so-and-so. I'm the branch manager of the bank that I left. The very branch that I left." Sometimes the stars just align, you know? And she looked me in my eye and said, "You ought to put your money in our bank." And I said, "I did have it in your bank." She said, "Oh," and walked away. Now, that's 11 years ago. What happened to me? Well, I've gone on. I've stayed with that bank, the other bank that I had through the balance of the time that I was in Florida. I've now moved back to Kentucky. My money is in a community bank, and they are represented in this room here today, tonight. Farmers Bank and Trust Company, Princeton, Kentucky. Okay? But let me tell you what's even more important than that. The National Bank. Now, you remember 3, 4, 5, 6 years ago when all the experts were saying that community banks were going to be swallowed up by the national banks, that there would be no such thing as a community bank. They couldn't withstand the pressure. Y'all remember that? That national bank is no longer. It has been swallowed up. And guess what I watched last night? Well, I was watching the Olympics last night. There was a commercial, Bank of America. And it was talking about We are the community bank. Do you understand what the big banks are finally realizing? That they need to be you. We have an opportunity in the community banking world to make a difference by touching customers at the local level in such a way as to build a relationship that will last generations. Not days, not weeks, not months, but generations. But it comes by understanding what service looks like. Now, I've already told you that you can see, and you know this anyway, you can see customer service, bad customer service, poor customer service, lacking customer service from a mile away. But what does good customer service look like? I can show you. I can show you what good customer service looks like. That's what good customer service looks like. It's not what you expected, was it? It's not what I expected. Not the day that I encountered this gentleman. But let me tell you a story that tells you what I learned from this man about customer service. San Francisco, California, Friday night. Took place 7 years ago this past February. I was speaking to a group. It was a late engagement like this one. I finished up about 10:30, and I knew it was going to be tough because I had to catch a flight the very next morning. I was flying back to, ultimately, Columbia, South Carolina because I had a presentation on Sunday morning, first thing. Well, those of you who travel by air know that it's always been difficult, even more so in the last few years, but that particular trip was one of the hardest I've ever taken. I've flown over 1.5 miles on Delta alone, and yet this was one of the most difficult ever. I start off in San Francisco, California, got up at 3:30 in the morning to get there to catch the first flight out. Flew from San Francisco to Dallas, Dallas to Atlanta, had delays and problems all during the time I won't even go into at this point. But it took literally all day for me to make it to Atlanta, Georgia, and still had one more leg that would get me into Columbia, South Carolina that evening. Well, I can remember very specifically sitting in the Atlanta airport thinking, oh, I don't know if I can make this or not. I mean, I am absolutely dog tired. And I remember thinking, as I sat in that airport that evening, I remember thinking, if I can just get to Columbia and get a quick ride from the airport to my hotel, get a good warm meal and a good soft bed, I'll be good to go for my presentation on Sunday morning. Well, eventually, I made it to Columbia, South Carolina. Now, there had been so many delays and so many cancellations of flights and all the rest that I was absolutely convinced my bags would not be there. Those of you who travel a lot, no, I mean, they're not going to be there. But you still have to go through the scenario. You got to walk up to the carousel. You got to stand there and watch everybody else's bags go by until eventually there are no more bags. Then you've got to go and say, my bags didn't arrive. So I'm standing there fully expecting my bags not to arrive. And then all of a sudden, through those little plastic strips, I see them part, and there's one of my bags. I go, what? My bag. And then the second one followed. And the next thing I know, I have all my bags. I don't know how this happened. It's a miracle, but I'm pleased. I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, this may turn out to be better than I hoped for. So I gather my bags up. The next thing I know, I go over to the courtesy board. You know, every airport, large or small, has a courtesy board. It's the one that lists the airport, the hotels and the motels, the shuttle services, the cabs, etc. I go over to the courtesy board because I'm trying to find my hotel. I'm looking, there it is, Ramada Plaza Hotel. For shuttle pickup, dial 1-3. I pick up, I dial 1-3. It rings once or twice. All of a sudden, I hear this very southern female voice on the other end of the phone. Ramada Plaza Hotel, how may I help you? Yes, this is Philip Van Hooser. I'm soon to be a guest at your hotel. I'm out at the airport right now. If you could send that free shuttle out, I'd appreciate it. Sir, we ain't got no shuttle. I said, excuse me? She said, sir, we have no shuttle. I said, well, I don't understand. I'm at the airport. It says for free shuttle pickup, dial 1-3. I dial 1-3. I'm talking to you. She said, sir, we do not have any shuttle. I don't know why they don't take that thing off that board. She said, you just catch cab. We'll see you when you get here. Bye-bye. Click. Now, many people would define service as meeting and or exceeding what? The expectations of the customers. Were my expectations met and or exceeded at this point? No. I'm already tired, And now I have to take a cab. Now, let me go ahead and tell you right up front. I do not like riding in cabs. I ride in cabs all the time. I have to. Do it regularly. But I don't like the concept of cabs. I don't like getting in a car with a stranger in a strange town, asking them to take me someplace I do not know where I'm going, and then pay for the privilege, and I don't even get to pick which cab. They tell you which cab to get in. Okay? And so, I'm left with a dilemma. If I'm going to get to my hotel, I've got to take a cab, but I don't like taking cabs. Well, I drag my bags out, and I got to tell you, my attitude is not sterling at this point. And I drag my bags out there, and I come around the corner, and I see this man. Now, that's not exactly how he was standing when I first saw him. He was leaned up against the front quarter panel of his car. He had his cap pulled down over his eyes. He had his hands in front of him and his chin tucked in his chest. I think he was asleep. All right? But as I started and dragging my bags, he must have heard me because he cut his eyes and he looked at me and he said, "Hey, buddy, you need a ride?" "Yeah." "Well, come on, buddy, I'll take you." "What other options do I have?" I drag my bags over there. He opens up the trunk. He starts putting the bags in the trunk. He said, "Go ahead and get in." I said, "Do you care if I get in up front?" Now, don't ask me why, but I like to be up there where the action is, okay? He said, "No, suit yourself. Sit wherever you want to. I don't mind. Get in front." And so I did. I went around and got in the front. I still wasn't happy. He finished loading the bags up. He comes around. He gets in the driver's side. He shuts the door behind him. He reaches over, starts the car. But before he puts it in gear, he turns his attention to me, extends his hand, and says, "My name's William Watson. My friends call me Willie. I'd sure appreciate it if you'd call me Willie." I don't think I'd ever been formally introduced to a cab driver before. I'd ridden with dozens, maybe hundreds, but he's introducing it. And now I'm looking at his arm. Now, I grew up in Princeton, Kentucky. I think I learned a certain amount of courtesy and you know, good manners. I didn't mean not to take his hand. It didn't strike me initially that he wanted to shake hands with me. And yet he holds his hand out there. And finally it struck me, he wants to shake hands. So I took his hand. I shook his hand. I looked at him and said, "My name is Philip Van Hooser. My friends call me Phil. I'd appreciate it if you'd call me Phil." He said, "It's good to meet you, Phil." Then when he turned loose of my hand, before he put that car in gear, he reached over to the radio, you know, the one that for 40 miles, and he turned it off. He said, "That thing is for getting customers. It's not for worrying my customers. You don't mind, do you?" I said, "No, I don't mind." We'd been together for less than 30 to 45 seconds, and already I knew there was something different about this man. Why? Because he was exceeding my expectations. I'd seen dozens, hundreds of cab drivers before, had the experience many, many times, but this one was different, and it stood out. I knew I needed to keep him talking. So as he puts the car in the gear and he starts to pull away from the curb, I say to him, what many of us have, these throwaway lines, you know, like, "How you doing?" and that sort of thing. We don't really care how they're doing. We just have learned to ask that question to keep them talking. Well, I threw out another question. I said, "So how's business today?" And sort of with a flick of his wrist, just like that, over his shoulder, he said, "I've been sitting in that line since 12 o'clock today. You're my first fare of the day." I immediately stole a look at my watch, and it was 4:37. If he was telling me the truth, and I have no reason to believe that he would lie to me, he'd been sitting there for 4 hours and 37 minutes waiting for his first paying fare of the day. Now, let me ask you a question. When business is bad, can that get under your skin? And you can sit there and you can think about what a lousy job and what a lousy career choice you had, and you can think about how bad things are and how bad things are going to continue to be. Or you can sit there and say, "I don't know when that first customer is going to come, but whenever he or she comes, I'm going to amaze them." And I believe that's what Willie Watson decided to do. Anyway, we get in the car. I said, "How long have you been driving, Willie?" "Oh, I've been driving for 34 years, I think he said. And so we chit-chat about that for a while. But it was obvious that Willie didn't want to talk about himself. He wanted to talk about me. He said, "Phil, first name basis, Phil, He said, what brings you to Columbia, South Carolina? Oh, I'm here to work. Oh, really? What kind of work are you in? Well, I'm a professional speaker. Really? I carry professional speakers every now and then to and from the airport. Who are you speaking for tomorrow? Well, I'm speaking for a group called Substation 2. And I started explaining. It's a sandwich shop. It sort of competes with Subway. He put his hand up. He said, oh, I know Substation 2 well. I said, well, I don't know them so well. I've never worked for them before, and they don't have them in Florida. He said, you've never eaten at one then? I said, no. He said, well, when you do, try number 13. It's fine. I said, this man knows everything. He said, Phil, let me ask you a question. As we're approaching the hotel now, he said, Phil, let me ask you a question. How long are you going to be in Columbia, South Carolina? I said, not long. As soon as I finish tomorrow, I got to be back on an airplane headed out again. He said, you going home? I said, no, I wish I was, but I've got to fly to Arizona. I'm speaking to Arizona first thing Monday morning. He said, it's important you get to the airport on time, isn't it? I said, yes, it is. He said, Phil, let me ask you another question. He said, how do you expect to get to the airport tomorrow? Okay, that's a good question. I knew where he's coming from. I said, well, Willie, I guess I'll have to take a cab. He said, well, let's talk about that for a second. He said, I know that you travel a lot and you know how this cab system works. He said, however, we're in Columbia, South Carolina. That could be argued that we're in the heart of the Bible Belt. Now, tomorrow's Sunday, and I'll go ahead and tell you right now that some of these cab drivers don't work on Sunday. And some of them that do work on Sundays have standing fares to take people to and from church and to and from dinner after church. He said, so I'm not saying you can't get a cab tomorrow, but I'm going to tell you something, Phil. It's going to be more difficult to get a cab on a Sunday in Columbia, South Carolina than it is on a Saturday. And then he paused, sort of stroked his chin, looked back at me and said, I'm going to do something for you that I don't do for everybody. I said, really, what's that? He said, if you tell me to come get you tomorrow, then I'm going to come pick you up and I'm going to get you safe and sound from the airport, from the hotel to the airport, make sure that you get to Arizona on time to be able to support your family. I said, well, there's only one problem with that, Willie. He said, now, what's that? I said, well, I know what time I finish tomorrow. I said, but I don't know what time I'll be able to be out. See, I've got books and stuff and people want to talk and all the rest. And I love that, but I can't tell you. He said, stop right there. He said, what time's the presentation over? I said, well, it'll be over about 12:15, 12:30. He said, okay, I'll tell you right now. I'm going to be out in front of that hotel at 12 noon sharp tomorrow. He said, if you don't come out to 12:30, I'll still be there. If you don't come out to 1, I'll still be there. He said, if you don't come out to 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I'll still be sitting here. He said, now, I don't do this for everybody. He said, because some people don't believe in cab drivers and they'd stand one up, but I know you wouldn't do that, Phil. No, Willie, you don't have to worry about that with me. He said, what about it? You think you want to do that or not? What would you say? I said, Willie, sounds like a deal. One more thing I don't have to worry about. He said, I'll be there. We pulled up in front of the hotel. I paid him his fare plus a healthy tip, right? Because he had earned it. He had met and exceeded my expectations. Now, I went on into the hotel. Now, I won't even get into all that story. Except to say they continued to be consistent. Let's just put it that way, okay? Well, anyway, I ended up in bed, got a good night's sleep. That next morning, I was up to do the presentation for 65 managers of Substation 2 restaurants from all over the Southeast. It's a three-hour program on customer service, and I'm in the middle of the program, and this happens to me sometimes. My tongue gets ahead of my mind sometimes, and I end up saying things before I really have a chance to think about it. I looked at my watch at this point in the program, and it happened to be exactly 20 minutes till 12, and I remember saying, oh, this is a good illustration, and I pointed at them, and I said, okay, all of you own these, your franchisees, you own these Substations restaurants. How many of you can guarantee me that in your restaurants right now, 20 minutes to 12, that you know exactly what's happening and absolutely have total confidence that you're right? I saw all these puzzled looks on people's face. I said, all right, let me help you. How many of you can tell me that you know exactly that the bathrooms are absolutely spotless and they will continue to be held that way throughout the course of the time that the restaurant's open today? You absolutely know that. How many of you are absolutely confident that the first guest that walks through the doors as soon as they're unlocked and everyone that follows thereafter will be greeted individually and personally as if they're valued to the business? How many of you can guarantee me that the food is fresh and will be continue to be fresh and stocked, et cetera, throughout the day? How many? Show of hands. How many of you can guarantee me that? 65 managers of Substation 2 restaurants, not one hand go up. And I don't count that a negative. I count that a positive. They're being honest. Many of them said, that's what we're working toward. That's what we expect. Could I guarantee it? I don't know. I don't want to raise my hand. And this is where my tongue got ahead of my brain. I said, well, I'll guarantee you right now. Matter of fact, I'll bet anybody in here $100 that my cab driver will be here at 12 noon. And then I went, Lord, I just bet $6,500. My wife's going to kill me. I quickly added, though, but if he is here, y'all got to pay me before you leave. And, of course, we laughed it off. But then I said, see, you got to have confidence in something. And I thought it was a great point. And then I went on to my next point, whatever it was. What I didn't think about, though, was that at exactly 3 minutes till 12, six of the 65, a full one-tenth, got up and walked out en masse. Now, people come and go periodically. I understand that. But six got up and walked out together. I thought, Lord, I've made somebody mad. At exactly 2 minutes after 12, all six walked back in. They did not take their seats. They just stood there waiting to be called on. Well, I'm not going to ignore them. Nobody else was. I said, what? One of them said, Willie's here. I said, well, I knew he would be, you know. I finished my presentation that day, gathered up my materials. By the time I got out, it was after 12:30, probably approaching 1 o'clock. And as I drug my stuff out onto the sidewalk, just like I drug it in the night before, I saw Willie standing there. His arms were crossed. He was smiling, just like he's smiling right now. I said, how you doing, Willie? And his first words to me were these. You've been talking about me, ain't you? I said, yes, I have. Why wouldn't I? See, the amazing thing is that you're going to be talked about one way or the other. People see service as being good or bad, and they're going to talk about you in either event. Now, this may sound foolish to you, but I mean it with absolutely no exaggeration whatsoever. Willie Watson taught me the best customer service lessons I've ever learned in my life. Matter of fact, he taught me seven things, and because of the time, I'm not going to go into any of the seven in great detail, but I want to give you the seven things that Willie Watson taught me and that I have since been sharing with people all over the country. Matter of fact, you might find this interesting. During the time since I met Willie Watson, I have shared the story I've just shared with you. Absolutely no exaggeration in the story at all. Total truth to the word. I shared this story with somewhere in excess of 40,000 people. Willie Watson's never been to a customer conference that CSI or anybody else put on. Willie Watson learned customer service because he understood it pays. What did I learn from Willie Watson? Number one, I learned that you redefine the routine activities in your job. You redefine them. You look for those things that you do regularly and realize that that's the foundation of your business. Not the new things that will be coming up next week, next month, next quarter, next year, but the things you're doing today are the things the customers are noticing. They don't care what else is happening just yet. Those become moments of truth. Every time the phone rings, every time a customer walks in off the street, every time one comes through the window, every time you process a statement, that's an opportunity to prove your professionalism one more time, a moment of truth. Number two, Willie taught me that recognizing and acknowledging the customer immediately is absolutely key. From the moment that I walked up, Willie's attention was solely on me. Not on the ball scores, not on the traffic, not on anything that was going around, but on me, his customer. And he made the most of it. Why? Because number three, he gave me his undivided attention. Undivided attention. From the time we were in that cab, as far as I was concerned, he felt as if I was the only other person on the planet. And all during that process, number four, he listened honestly. He learned to listen so he could listen honestly. He asked questions. He wanted to know what kind of business I was in. He wanted to know where I was going. He wanted to know what was important to me. And then he fashioned his service model around my needs, not the other way around. Well, this is what I do. If you don't like it, Mr. Van Hoosen, just get out of the cab right now. That's not the way it was. Number five, he listened and used a little common sense, which led to number six, which meant he bent the rules sometime. Listen to me very carefully, and I wish I had more time to go into this point. But effective customer service means that you bend the rules, does not mean that you break them. And there's a fine line. You got to learn that. But once you learn that, then customer service becomes an individual opportunity with every person you come in contact with. What do they need from us? And then finally, number 7. Willie made the last few seconds count. He did. He pulled me up to the curb. I'd have paid the fee and I would have given him his tip. I'd already planned to do that. But he asked for a little bit more and he in fact doubled his business. How many times could we just ask our customers for a little bit more and enhance our business in your banks? Somebody says, yeah, we had a big party last night. Really, why? Oh, little Sally turned 16. Well, Sally, is she already 16? You knew Sally forever. Wouldn't it be about time? Well, are you going to buy a car? You know, we got a great loan. We'll get a car for little Sally here. We'll put her in a good, safe car, you know, one that you can afford. Well, John and Jim, they're getting married. Really? Have they thought about starting their IRA account? We can certainly help with that. Do you understand? Business is there. The big boys are not going to ask for it. Because, see, they see bigger fish. The community bankers realize that business is done one person at a time. Service is not only an opportunity, it's an obligation. It's an obligation to do for your neighbors what you expect them in other capacities to do for you. If we set the standard and if we set the model, then other people start to see a baseline from which they can work. Thank you very much.
As always, we welcome your feedback on each month's presentation. Feel free to give us a call with your comments, or if you prefer, you may fax or email our office. You're already aware of our 3-day basic business boot camps and Service Managers University programs, but something new has been added. You can now attend free webinars on both programs. Each 20-minute webinar is held every other week. To join a session, simply call our office at 1-800-432-7963. Or you can go to our website at www.grandyassociates.com. The website lists the dates and times, and you can register to attend right online. Come listen and learn. You'll be glad you did. For more information on our 3-day basic business boot camps or Service Managers University, simply call Grandy & Associates at 1-800-432-7963. Or check us out on the web. Again, the address is www.grandyassociates.com. A small investment in training can produce big profits. The Service Contractors Business CD of the Month is produced and distributed by Grandy & Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line, 1-800-432-7963. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.